Welcome back to Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
Andrew, is it offensive to call Christmas Xmas?
It's not.
As it happens, there's a historical basis for calling it Xmas, and we're going to talk about it, amongst other Christmassy things. So before we dive in, we hope everybody's enjoying their Christmas break, their time off from work with family and all that stuff, and we hope you enjoy this very silly episode today. So, Andrew, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this Xmas thing, because you had some really interesting points earlier for the use of Xmas, no matter what your religious or irreligious stance is on this topic. So I'm just going to pass it to you and let you talk about this, the history of Xmas, if you will.
Yeah, so X comes from the Greek letter chi, and this abbreviation for Christmas, Xmas, the first evidence we have for this is 998 years ago. So about almost 1,000 years ago in writing, we have the Greeks abbreviating Christmas as Xmas. I mean, because X is basically the letter that was associated with the cross. So, and that's the origin of the word Christ. So Xmas really is Christmas. It's just an abbreviation. And it's not like a new thing that mothers started putting on their cards like 20 years ago when they got all busy and, you know.
Wait, are you saying Christ and cross are etymologically related?
Oh, yeah, very much.
That's really?
Christ is cross? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Christ is cross, yeah.
Interesting. Sure. Kind of brings a whole new meaning to Christ cross.
I don't know what that is, but
crisscross.
I'm just gonna pretend I do. Oh, crisscross. Okay, yeah, kind of, I suppose. Crisscross.
These are dumb puns.
He's like double Jesus. Anyway, the war of Christmas is over, and there's been a peace treaty, just so you know.
This is an observation I made earlier when you were saying this, but the X actually, and I never really noticed it. I mean, it's obviously like it is kind of a cross, but it looks like a T or a cross laying on its side.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, this abbreviation for Christmas is super old. And of course the origins of Christmas traditions predate Christ, predate Christianity by kind of a long shot. It was kind of copied, in fact, from the Roman traditions that predate it and some Germanic traditions like Yule. So I think we should talk about the origin of a lot of Christmas traditions and yeah.
I guess the other thing that's interesting with this argument is, you know, if you're fighting for Christmas as opposed to Xmas, because you want the word Christ in there, you kind of have to acknowledge where a lot of these traditions came from, like the use of an evergreen tree, like that goes back to like the times before Christmas where people were just celebrating winter solstice because it was this tree that never died in the winter. And it's just a beautiful symbol of life. So it's, there's so many things, and this is just one of them, and we'll get into more, but, it's no secret that a lot of these Christmas traditions are ancient and are much, much older than, Roman Catholicism or even Judaism itself, probably a lot of them.
Basically none of the Christmas traditions, you know, trees and lights and gift giving, stockings, Santa Claus, none of the things we associate with Christmas are religious in origin, or at least not from the Christian religion, and often predate that or just come from other sources. Yeah, other places.
Except the nativity scene.
The other thing is I think today, I mean, people, you know, even on the non-religious side of the equation or the other religion side of the equation get upset about Christmas being such a holiday in North America, in Europe, in the Christian world. But, I don't know why people are really offended by this. This is the same thing as Sasha Sagan was talking about this in her book, how you can appreciate a lot of the traditions we have through a secular lens. And I really do. I think I love Christmas, even though I'm not religious at all. Mm-hmm. I think Christmas is wonderful. It's a celebration of the solstice. It's a celebration of family. It's a celebration of the new year, in a sense. It's a celebration of winter. It's a celebration of, it's just like a way to mark time and celebrate and have all these traditions. It's great, actually.
Yeah.
And
I think Sasha, you're a disgusting consumer.
No, actually, I'm not. I don't really buy anything. I'm the least consumer person there is, in a sense. But, Sasha Sagan was saying even devil worshippers love Christmas. Because there was this group of devil worshippers in this small town. And they were being interviewed and they wanted their pentagram. I guess that's what, like, the five-pointed star or whatever. They wanted their pentagram to be on display in the town center. They weren't complaining that there was this religious display, this crush or whatever, in the town center with the lights, but they just wanted to be a part of it because they didn't want to feel left out.
Well, let's have a side jaunt here on devil worshippers since you bring it up, because because this is an amusing debate, or not even a debate, just a conversation, because there's so many people that will say, like, mainly Christians will say that like devil worshippers are like, it's like a legitimate religion, like Satanism is a real official legitimate religion, and it is, but it's also a joke religion. It's the youngest religion there is. It started in 1966. And of course there's like always going to be like shady cults and things like that. People that like do weird shit that isn't really, associated with an official religion. There's all these like weird little, you know, cults you can find that believe all kinds of weird things. But Satanism itself is actually kind of like it was a joke religion started in the face of, you know, a predominantly Christian Western culture in America. It was like an answer. It was basically like it was all these outcasts, these social outcasts who weren't Christians, coming together to like start this club that was like irreligious. And so they just like embraced Satan as a symbol because of how, you know, controversial it would be. Like the whole point was to stir up controversy, not to actually worship the devil. Is the point. So Satanism is not really an official religion. Devil worshippers aren't really devil worshippers. They don't really believe that there's like a devil like possessing people or something like that. It's just like it's kind of a joke.
Well, some probably do, but yeah, maybe the mainstream ones don't.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is you can find people that'll do, you know, there's all kinds of crazy people, but the people who officially go to like Satanist congregations, it's like, you know, to them, Satan, you know, they embrace it as like a symbol of irony. It's like Satan represents like human impulses, right. You know.
Well, since Christianity is founded on the struggle between good and evil, isn't it important to have the bad guys? So in a sense, they're doing a service.
It's the balancing of the force.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you have to have the Sith in order to have the Jedi kind of thing. A lady got kicked off the plane or forced to change her shirt recently because she had a devil shirt or something on, right? I think that happened.
No way.
Yeah. Anyway, Christmas traditions.
Yeah, let's get back to this. Let's get off this Satan thing. This is kind of weird. We were talking about...
So many of the traditions that we associate with Christmas date to the Roman festival of Saturnalia. And that's why I always say, keep the Saturn in Saturnalia. Saturn obviously is one of the... Yeah, we say that.
Oh, I've never heard this. I think this must be a thing MIT graduates say in secret or something. This is like some little like...
Anyway, so basically what the Romans did after the Council of Nicaea in the 300s, Constantine became Roman emperor and instituted Christianity as the Roman religion. They didn't want people to discard their old traditions. They wanted to make it easy for people to join the club. So what they did is they just morphed this festival holiday called Saturnalia and made it Christmas. So instead of celebrating Saturn, the Roman god Saturn, I now celebrated Jesus' birthday. And this is a way to kind of bring everyone in, have a party. It had feasting. It had gift giving. It had the reversal of slave and master. So masters would become slaves for the day and slaves would become masters. Don't know how far that really went, but
yeah, anyway. I'm thinking this didn't go very far.
Huh? Yeah. Well, I mean, slavery was really different back in the Roman world, but anyway.
Are you pro slavery? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, not at all. But it's just no, obviously not. But I'm just saying when people envision picture slavery, they're usually picturing the kind of American New World slavery, which was horrible compared to the ancient Roman one, which was still obviously pretty horrible. But often slaves were just kind of like tutors and things like that. They were, you know. Anyway,
there's a distinction.
Strip someone of their freedom, and it's one of the most horrible things you can do. But I mean, slavery back in the old Roman world was not kind of the same chattel slavery that we had more recently.
I think the ultimate distinction is that back in ancient times, you're talking about the world was much more violent in general, and in modern slavery, it was a pretty civil world, but slavery was actually like worse somehow in the middle of that than it ever was before. But it's Yeah. Anyways,
because it was largely faceless. So foreign people from across the seas or whatever would like own these slaves and not know them and work them to death and not really care. Right. But in the Roman world, you kind of like lived with them and they were part of your family in some sense. And yeah. So anyway, it varied, but yeah. So anyway, big divergence. So because Christmas has this pagan origin in Saturnalia, Christians throughout history have not always celebrated Christmas. The Puritans in Massachusetts, the first English settlers in the New World, actually not the first, Jamestown was really earlier, but anyway, some of the earliest Puritans in Massachusetts, some of the earliest settlers, because it had its origin in Saturnalia in this pagan festival, they actually refused to celebrate Christmas because they thought it was a pagan holiday. So this the extreme religious people in America have in the past actually rejected Christmas because of its pagan origin.
Wow, that's interesting. My, how the times have changed.
Yeah. And other Christmas traditions, a lot of the ones that I think are really associated with Christmas, like the trees and the decorating the trees, the lights, the candles, all of that comes from Yule, because the Roman Empire expanded into the Germanic lands and they encountered all these barbarians. Actually, they called them Hairy Gauls, right? Yeah. There's two types of Gauls, the Gauls that were close and they were like the civilized Gauls, and then the Gauls beyond the border, they were called the Hairy Gauls.
I wonder if that's because they were evolutionarily predisposed to have more body hair or if they just didn't cut their head hair.
I think they probably just didn't shave and cut their hair. Yeah, a little bit of that. Because normally today we associate the Mediterranean world with more body hair. So, yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Anyway.
I feel like that social slang would not fly today, calling somebody a hairy gall.
Yeah. Hairy gall. Yeah. But they also had pants, which is kind of barbaric. So they introduced pants to the Roman Empire before they wore togas. And the Romans were offended when the Gauls came in with their pants and their battle axes
stupid pants
into the Senate. Yeah, exactly. So the Romans made fun of them for their pants.
That's so funny. Now, if you were a guy and you didn't wear pants, if you wore anything resembling a dress, you would get criticized.
Totally. But I guess they weren't cultured, they thought. So anyway, so they brought along this festival of Yule, which basically celebrates the solstice because the shortest day of the year is December 21st. So it was right around this time too. So everyone's kind of celebrating right around the end of December, because December is an astronomical phenomenon. It's when the day is the shortest. It's when the season changes and it starts becoming lighter again. So the darkest day of the year, in the Northern Hemisphere at least, is December 21st.
Oh, wait, it's the 21st? I thought it was the 25th.
21st. It's
so
the solstice.
So today, as we're recording, this will be the darkest day of the year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Correct.
Interesting.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I always thought it was the 25th
but it's right around the same time. And back in the ancient world, they probably weren't that great at predicting stuff. So they, you know, kind of mixes up. But Saturnalia, I think, is based on the 25th, which is why it came. Because there's no evidence that Jesus was born anytime around the 25th. And
well, this is,
They think it's more like March or something like that.
It's
more
July.
Likely. Oh, is it July? Okay, well, whatever it is, it's not the 25th of December. The 25th of December comes from the solstice and Yule and also Saturnalia, basically. I think Saturnalia mainly.
So there's more than one problem with this December 25th date, is the point.
Yeah, but it does come from something else. And, you know, mistletoe, Christmas trees, these all date back to the Germans, really, the Germanics. And actually, the practice of decorating Christmas trees in the modern sense originated about 500 years ago in Germany. And actually, even today, there's a lot of famous towns in Germany that are just known for making Christmas ornaments. That's like their main specialty. It's a really big thing there. And the reason why we have it in the English-speaking world is because Queen Victoria her husband was German, and she was basically descended from Germans too. And so Queen Victoria copied her German cousins and first displayed a Christmas tree in England. And then they sent out Christmas cards to everyone. And one of the Christmas cards they sent was to Benjamin Harrison at the White House, the American president. And he said, well, this is pretty cool. They're like got this evergreen tree in their house and they're putting these shiny balls on it and lighting candles on it. I want one of these. So then the White House, they copied Queen Victoria. So the White House first got this Christmas tree in 1889. So it's not really that old, actually, right? And this is when the first kind of Christmas tree in America started. It's just over, you know, 120, 30 years ago, I guess. And they sent out Christmas cards, and Americans obviously wanted to copy the president. The president's doing something cool. In those days, Americans wanted to copy the president.
Yeah, back in the days when presidents were cool.
So, yeah. And it kind of just spread through North America. That's like the mistletoe and the Christmas trees, probably the association with the North and the winter and reindeer, everything about kind of the North and the winter solstice, all the Santa stuff, except for Santa, as you know, probably was originally St. Nick.
Right.
St. Nicholas, right. And St. Nicholas was a bishop in Turkey, yeah. He's the patron saint of children and a bunch of other things, sailors and, yeah, gift-giving. So the gift-giving comes a little bit from Saturnalia, but mainly from the St. Nicholas thing, which people then, the Dutch actually, turned into Sinterklaas.
Right, and we covered this last year. We have an exhaustive cover of Santa Claus from last year's Christmas episode and whether or not you can teach your kid about Santa Claus. And
exactly.
And we established that he became a saint because he performed three public miracles, including bringing a person back from a child back from the dead who was supposed to be
back from the dead.
Yeah, he brought a kid back from the dead who was supposed to be eaten.
It's a really freaking weird story. Yeah,
it's a weird story. We're gonna take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise.
These kids that were supposed to be butchered and passed off as ham in a market.
If you ask me, the Santa Claus miracles put any miracle by Jesus to shame.
So St. Nicholas, back in Turkey, back in the day, 1,700 years ago, he's just browsing the market, and there's a vendor who's selling, he's a butcher, and he's selling meat products. And he says, oh, this meat tastes funny. I think this is probably made from kids.
I'm going to bring this cooked ham back to life.
He brings the cooked ham back to life as a kid. Yeah.
Yep.
And thereby became the patron saint of kids. That is a very interesting story.
This is history, people.
Is it history? I don't know. Anyway, so the English had this, people weren't really sure what St. Nicholas was known for. So the English, they found this old painting of St. Nicholas, and it showed him with a barrel full of children.
Okay.
And so this was interpreted by the English as St. Nicholas being the patron saint of children, which is sort of like, I guess, where the story comes from. But it was interpreted by other people as St. Nicholas being the patron saint of beer.
Yeah, that's a very evocative image. A bunch of children in a barrel. It puts monkeys in a barrel to shame.
Anyway, he's supposed to have put gifts in people's shoes, which... stockings.
The stocking origin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all these Christmas traditions have this pagan origin.
Which, I guess, shoes probably are a lot cleaner than socks. So I'm just going to say that was probably the superior tradition.
Well, it depends if you've worn them or not. I mean, it's hard to get the grime out of shoes. It kind of lingers for a lot longer, right? You can just throw the socks in the washing machine.
That's true. Maybe people wore bigger socks back in the day because they were wearing boots and stuff. And so maybe the shoes actually stayed pretty clean.
And also, they didn't have, like, elastic, stretchy stuff, so they just made the socks oversized.
Oh,
because they were probably made of wool, right? Like, imagine wool socks. That's pretty uncomfortable, and they were just not stretchy.
Wool's pretty stretchy.
Maybe naturally it's a bit stretchy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really interested in this conversation because growing up, I was raised in a family that was really opposed to anybody calling it anything but Christmas. Happy holidays was like, oh, well, you got to say happy holidays. Now you're trying to not say Christmas. My family definitely hated Xmas. They thought that was like the worst one because it was like putting an X over Christ.
You know? Oh, really? It's really funny because X represents the cross and it was like the original incarnation. So it's a shortening, it's an abbreviation that's gone back over 1,000 years, or I guess almost 1,000 years. So it's, yeah. It's hilarious because that abbreviation is ancient and literally just means Christ.
Yeah, I wish I had known that.
It's like, it's actually like more direct, in fact. It's like, yeah. Cross.
Here's a cross. Yeah, that's hilarious. That's why everyone should just embrace Xmas. It's way easier to type. It's not Xmas. Really any, oh, yeah. Not any easier to say.
But, I'm down with Xmas. And it's less obviously, I guess this is the thing, it's less obviously Christian, I guess. Yeah, happy holidays. So this is the thing, so I'm not really Christian, I guess I was sort of brought up Christian in a sense. Definitely we live in a majority Christian society in the United States. I find it strange that people get offended by Merry Christmas. I guess like I understand the move to happy holidays in a sense because it's more inclusive, but... A, I kind of think that Christmas, just based on its origins and also just the way it's celebrated today and the kind of symbolism of Christmas, obviously you do have the Jesus in the manger thing, but a lot of Christmas is basically just like the pagan stuff, right? Yeah. The Santa and the Christmas tree. So saying Christmas is perfectly reasonable and not that religious, in my opinion. It's kind of morphed into a, well, it started out as a non-religious holiday or a non-Christian holiday. It morphed into a Christian one, and then it's kind of morphing back into a non-Christian one, and it's just becoming the sort of default solstice slash family slash fun time holiday, I guess, in the West, right? But the other thing about that is, even if it did have a religious connotation, why is that a problem? Like, I wouldn't be offended if people, if in the Middle East, I go over and they wish me a happy Ramadan or whatever, somber Ramadan, more likely, probably.
Somber Ramadan.
Somber and fulfilling Ramadan. Although, what is Ramadan based on? Is that based on the return of the Prophet to Medina after he was cast into Mecca? Maybe something. So maybe it is a celebration. I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, I actually think Happy Holidays is the best one because I find that people say that is like an all encapsulating term for Thanksgiving, the various Christmas, winter, you know, solstice, Kwanzaa holidays, and New Year's. It's like all encapsulating of like the three major end of the year holidays. So like people say that constantly. They start saying it at Thanksgiving. That, although it's funny they don't include Halloween for some reason. So November is clearly the cutoff for happy holidays. But people say it for, you know, for the whole last 2 months of the year. So I don't feel like, you know, I don't know. Happy holidays makes sense to me. And it's probably the most, if you're going to just embrace one.
But people, at the same time, I think also people on the other side of the spectrum shouldn't be offended if people say Merry Christmas to you. And I think it's perfectly acceptable, even in the non-religious setting.
Anyway. I see. You're talking about the people that get upset when, that's interesting too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, people definitely get upset by Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
This is, like, the reason why.
Of course. I mean, people should take any, you know, like, greeting or best wishes as, like, a compliment or, like, a friendly thing instead of getting, like, hung up on the fact that the person giving the good tidings didn't know which holiday they're celebrating because they're all essentially celebrating the end of the year and the return of the sun.
Yeah.
It would be like if you spoke Spanish and I didn't speak Spanish and I came up and said hello instead of knowing how to say hello in Spanish and like and you got mad about it.
Yeah, or if I wished you a happy devil worshiper day.
Yeah, well, that was a little more evocative, I guess. A little more evocative.
Anyway, the other thing, Merry Christmas, incidentally, just like obviously the Christmas part is something that most people focus on, but the Merry part is a very American thing, actually, because in Britain, I had an uncle, we always used to celebrate Christmas at my uncle's house, who was from the United Kingdom, from Britain, and he always would say, Happy Christmas, you know? And they actually say Happy Christmas in most English-speaking countries.
Happy Christmas. That's true. Yeah, I have my British friend always says Happy Christmas.
Yeah. I think in Australia, probably New Zealand, they probably do that too.
Yeah.
Canada, we kind of just do the Merry Christmas because we're like, we're too close to America and we get all buy all the Hallmark cards.
I can remember the first time I heard Happy Christmas having grown up in the insulated South. And I remember thinking, ooh, that's so sophisticated. Happy Christmas.
Yeah, it does sound more sophisticated, right? Yeah.
Because Merry is kind of associated with like, I don't know, drunkenness a little more than the word happy.
Yeah, it is totally.
So like, yeah, Merry Christmas. Yeah. I don't know.
Drink and be merry. Yeah. You drink and be merry.
You don't drink and be happy. Definitely.
Right. Well, people say that too.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So actually, I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell's book, Talking to Strangers, and he has a very interesting idea about beer that's well supported, actually. It's not just like an idea, but what really alcohol does to you. And people think it, what it does is reduces your inhibitions. That's not exactly true. What he's proposing, or what people have proposed, is that it's myopic. So basically it narrows your focus down to now, and it prevents you from thinking of the future, prevents you from thinking of the past, kind of puts you in the moment. It's like the ultimate Zen, in a sense. It's like the ultimate live in the moment. What do you call that?
Meditation?
Mindfulness.
Oh, mindfulness, yeah.
Ultimate mindfulness.
Drinking is the best mindfulness practice.
Above 0.15, above 0.15 alcohol level, your ability to create memories shuts down. So you forget everything. You won't remember anything. It's the ultimate mindfulness, is definitely just get super drunk.
Well, I guess the ultimate argument against this would be that it's not necessarily a mindfulness practice. It's like taking a drug for mindfulness.
Wait, why not? I think I just solved everyone's problems.
Yeah, you're going to give everybody cancer. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah. Anyway, so you don't think about like consequences as much, or you don't like draw on your memory to remember, oh, well, this is socially inappropriate for me to get up on the table and take off my pants and start singing, right? So you do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When you're drunk, yeah.
It's mindfulness without practice. That's what I think. I think that's the danger of it.
So do you, when you put out hot milk for Santa, did you spike it?
No.
Oh, not rum? I think Santa wants a bit of rum.
No, my parents kept no form of alcohol around ever.
Oh, really? You didn't have any alcohol in the house? What about Sacramento wine?
Oh, see, my parents, No, they didn't even have a champagne with me at my champagne toast at my wedding.
Hmm.
I did. We had a dry wedding because we were paying for it all ourselves and we were broke.
Grape juice?
Yeah, exactly. But we did a champagne toast, and my parents are strongly opposed to alcohol.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I don't think that they. I think for them it's more like they both had family that had problems with alcohol, yeah, and they were kind of like experienced a lot of negativity around surrounding like people not being able to control their impulses or something, but. But there are a lot of people, especially in the South, a lot of like super conservative people who just don't drink. And actually Tennessee was, growing up anyways, it's not like this now, but you couldn't even buy beer on Sundays in Tennessee.
But isn't that like the home of bourbon and all this alcohol in Tennessee?
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Bourbon. Yep. It's not bourbon unless it's made here, technically.
And which is funny because Bourbon is French, and I'm not sure what the French connection is. Is it because the French explorers got there first?
Yeah, it's kind of like how if it's not made in Scotland, it's not Scotch. And if it's not made in Tennessee, it's not bourbon.
Yeah.
I want to revisit something we talked about last Christmas on the podcast before we wrap up here and just kind of give a little status update, if you will. So last year when we covered Santa, we were talking about whether or not you should raise your kids to believe in Santa. And, Sarah and I haven't like necessarily supported or unsupported. We've just kind of like said, like, what do you think? And let the kids think whatever they think. But this year, my 4-year-old finally came to the conclusion on her own that Santa is not real. So we have no kids in the house that believe in Santa now. And I'm curious to see how this Christmas goes down because...
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But I'm
not even your youngest. Your youngest probably is too young to even know what Santa is.
Yeah, but I'm just assuming
he's less than a year or something, right?
He's just over a year, yeah. So now the question is like, now that we have, because it's 6, 4, and 1 are our ages. So Hugo's the youngest. He's probably not even gonna grow up with two way older sisters that don't believe in Santa. So we're wondering now,
no
like,
chance.
Well, he probably won't even have a chance. Have you guys encouraged or discouraged Santa with Athena?
We have not mentioned Santa at all.
Yeah, are you going to?
I'm not planning on it.
It's hard to avoid like books and stuff and like even commercials on TV. Like Santa's everywhere at Christmas. Well,
she knows what reindeer are.
Okay.
Because she's interested in animals. I don't think she knows they're associated with Christmas in any way. But yeah.
Huh.
I wasn't planning on mentioning it, honestly.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought up such a sore subject.
No. I mean, it's not a sore subject at all. I just don't really care one way or the other. So
no,
I'm
joking.
Just wasn't going to mention it. I mean, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, like, it's as pervasive as, like, Disney princess culture, it's the idea of Santa. Probably even more so. Like, how do you go through Christmas without seeing or hearing about Santa? So it's like...
Oh, well, if she does and asks about it, I'll just say, yeah, this is like Santa Claus that people think does this. And, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to weigh in on whether it's real or not real, I think, probably, unless she specifically asks. But
yeah, well, your kid's already...
I'll tell her the mythology of Santa Claus if she wants to know it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, Saint Nick is a great story. That's the reason we decided to...
It's kind of a bizarro story, as you may recall from earlier in this conversation.
Yeah, it is. There's bizarre mythology surrounding it. One has to believe, in order to take that stance, that he actually did raise these children hams from the dead. So, you know, you can either say it was made up later after he was dead as a way to, like, you know... Or was this, like, something... Was he a saint while he was living, or did he become a saint after he died?
Does anyone become a saint while they're living? I think everyone does, like... maybe some people do, but generally they make you saint after you die because then you're special.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say negative things about the dead. So,
So therefore Saint Nick's story is actually a good one. And all the weird stuff is only made up later.
Maybe we don't know. It was such a long time ago. I don't think we have a very good grasp on the real Saint Nicholas.
Interesting. But we have a pretty good grasp on Australopithecus somehow.
I don't think we have a very good grasp on specific actions and behaviors of one particular individual of Australopithecus, I guess it would be, yeah. So no, we know general things about them like we do about Homo sapiens.
Yeah. Okay, so you're taking the same stance on Australopithecus as you are Saint Nick.
I think essentially, yes. We can judge them as far as the evidence goes.
This is the single most strange conversation surrounding Christmas I've ever been a part of.
Yep. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas.
Almost said Merry, but happy Christmas.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, wherever it finds you. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can do that. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these episodes every Monday. Hope to have you back next week. We are going to be joined by Ahmed Best, the voice of Jar Jar Binks from Star Wars and creator and host of the Astrofuturist podcast. We're super excited to have him on.
Afrofuturist.
That's what I said. Afro. What did I say?
I think you said Astrofuturist.
Astro?
Yeah.
Perhaps I did. Time will tell. Mm. I hope you enjoyed this, and we hope to have you back next week.
And if you want Santa to visit your house, don't light the fireplace.
This is good advice.
All right. Thanks for listening.